sun.
A great collaboration between Ray Charles and Eric Clapton. None of us are free. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And just to remind you, this Sunday, that's a couple of days from now, I'm going to be in Manhattan at the Community Church for the specific purpose of meeting you and talking to you and sharing thoughts and ideas with you. And I'm hoping that you'll be there. It's at 40 East 35th Street between Park Avenue and Madison Avenue, the community church. It starts at 1 o'clock, and we have a registration, and it's simply signing a form saying you were right there, and it just signing up saying you were there, because we are going to be building things. We're going to be constructing a new way of doing things. But first, we have to meet each other. And this is the second time I've been invited by the Global Affairs Committee of the church. And I'm so delighted and honored, and I'm looking forward to being there. So It's Sunday at 1 o'clock at the Community Church. That's at 40 East 35th Street between Park Avenue and Madison Avenue. I'm so looking forward to it. I am bristling with anticipation. Is it a good thing to bristle? Well, I'm bristling. I don't know about you. All right, so it is Free Your Mind Friday, and we've been talking some good stuff this week. So let's polish off the week with the same idea of bringing to our attention issues and opinions that you have about the big news that we have been pondering, and some of it we haven't gotten to yet, but maybe you can bring us up to speed by offering an opinion about it. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. It would be helpful if you have a strong opinion. It doesn't matter whether you think people will agree with you or not. but it is something that you feel compelled to bring to our attention, and particularly from a particular perspective. So that's what this is all about. 888-874-4888. Mart, you lead us off in our discussions today.
Yes, greetings, beloved. I'm just so delighted. I have been itching. I thought that in the first few days, at least a good 3 days, I think that what you had to say about the current situation in this country should be put up in some sort of audio podcast or audio YouTube. It was just excellent. And on Monday, what it reminded me of was, I guess in the early 2000s, when I had reached out to a lady, and it reminded me of that conversation in New Jersey. She had started an organization to impeach Trump, and W. Bush. And it reminded me of how intransigent Pelosi was in terms of, first of all, not getting an accurate and proper handling of what happened September 11, 2001, the immediate going to the already written Patriot Act, the wars that turned out to be seven that Wesley Clark shared when a Pentagon guy brought him into the office, the Iraq invasion based on lies and connection to September 11. Rendition, torture, and on and on. Yes, it's just, to me, it's just a head shaker, because Amy Goodman did have Al Green come on yesterday or the day before, and he, as you shared with us, his talk at that time early on, he put in articles of impeachment, and when he was outlining it on Democracy Now, one of his articles was the bigotry of the administration resulting in certain policies. So he cited calling countries asshole countries, and then you're supposed to sit down and do an immigration plan, Charlottesville, and the separation, which, like I said, should be a human rights tribunal. There's just disaster at the border. They've been using solitary
control. But you're fertilizing the entire field right now. Could you hone in on a particular subject?
Yeah, well, just the imperative nature of the House moving forward on impeachment. I mean, Trump, in his latest tantrum, couldn't even get out the word. I mean, he says all kinds of profanity. He called our brothers in the NFL, and denigrated their mothers with a vulgar word. Yet he called it the I word, you know, as if it's a bad word. So he doesn't want that huge stain. Clinton lost his license for 5 years. That might back off some of his crazier business dealings when he's out of office. And to me, one of the things that's being missed by even the people calling for impeachment is his reckless fomenting, and Al Green he termed it ruthless, lawless, and reckless fomenting of violence. So a University of North Texas did a study, and when Trump spoke in counties, the hate crimes went up 226%. So somehow the people calling for impeachment, just recently, he's one of his...
Oh, wait, we have to put a plug in here,
yes,
for a minute,
yes,
so that we can get other people chiming in.
Yes,
thanks
indeed.
So much for getting us started today, Mark.
Thank you
for your call. Lincoln, from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Eugene.
Hello, Lincoln. How are you doing?
Yeah. Okay, looking forward to seeing you Sunday.
Oh, that's great.
And the rest of the family.
Thank you.
I was listening to you yesterday, and a couple of things came to my mind, that this time that we're living in the USA, and also throughout Europe, seems to be poetic justice. I was thinking about you saying, you know, how, you know, in America, you know, there's a time when, you know, the people would be thinking about hitching their little boat to their car and driving somewhere and going fishing or, you know, whatever on the water. But while they were doing that, the CIA, etc., were orchestrating the destabilization of countries and the murder of people in other countries by the thousands. So we were able to hitch our little boats and go out to sea. Yes, while this family called America was murdering people all over the world. And so we were pretending that we were seeking after our American dream and ignoring all the murders by the millions in Vietnam, in Nicaragua, in Guatemala, in Iran, in Iraq, the destabilization of the governments in Jamaica, you know, et cetera, and going on and on and on. So I think that it is hypocritical. And I see Trump as, and this time that we're living in, as the pimple that's about to burst. You know, this pimple was festering. And Trump is nothing but that pimple that's just showing up its head now and ready
but
for
aren't
all
you,
the
aren't you being? Aren't you being a bit, how should I say, would you feel better if people did not hitch their little boats to their cars and took their families on outings and so forth? The point being made, of course, you didn't explain what the point was that was being made. The point was not that people were ignoring what was going on as if, you know, they were part of the whole orchestration of denial of the U.S. actions abroad. Not at all. It was just a simple statement to say that there was a time, even within modest means, people had an entirely different feeling about the role of government and their relationship to it. And it was expressed in any number of ways, including how families would set out and have a nice Sunday out and come back home. Now, what was wrong with that? Why would you now accuse people who did that of being part of a conspiracy?
No, I was not accusing people. I was pointing out a fallacy in what you were saying. It's just as similar to the fallacy that when black people were trying to fight in World War II, and they were ready to kill for this country and kill for other countries, when black people were living in such abject misery in America, etc. You couldn't vote. You couldn't drink water from the same stand as the Caucasian. But yet you were trying to go to Europe to go kill Hitler. And that's what I'm saying. That was a fallacy in what you were saying yesterday.
But you see, that's how you. I'm referring to how you're phrasing it. That they were trying to do this. No. They were part of the whole of the country that was ordered into service of a country. There's nothing particularly sinister on their part about it. This is just how life turned out. They were ordered to go. So they went.
My point is this, though. My point is the way in which you couched it yesterday is a romanticization of the evil.
Lord have mercy.
It is. What
but
I'm saying,
let
don't
me just tell you. Let
I'm
me
not,
just
don't
tell
mis-
you.
Don't
just,
misunderstand
just to make
me.
It clear.
Don't misunderstand
just to
me.
Make it clear. I am not at all romanticizing anything. I am saying, when I pointed this out, it was to illustrate how in little ways ordinary people with ordinary jobs, ordinary lives, found a way to just live a particular life oriented around family and modest hopes and dreams and aspirations. That's all. I'm not so fiendish as to believe that they were oblivious to what was going on. Not at all. Not you at see, all.
Maybe I should say it in a little different way. What I am saying is this, that don't get me wrong, and I'm not against us having fun, because I was having my fun too when Vietnam was going on as a boy. I'm not against us doing that, but what I'm saying is we should be very careful about how we speak of these things. And as I say to you, it's just like a blackhead, you know. There are things going on under the skin, and we're not aware of it. And then suddenly when it pops up, we say, oh, wow. Look at that.
But I think you underestimate the capacity of people to understand their own condition. I think you totally misunderstand it. They knew better than anybody else what was going on in their lives because they had to live it. And
to suggest that they were
mindlessly going about life. Ignoring.
No, it's not about mindlessly going along. It's about, it doesn't really faze us until the pain hit us. When the pain was hitting others, nothing we are experiencing here in America under Trump can be compared to Fallujah being leveled a few years ago. No city in this country has been leveled. All right? So what Trump is doing is nothing compared to what people are living through in Syria. And if we want to say that is so, then we are really in total denial. Nothing that
I'm trying to figure out where you got the impression that is what people are saying.
I'm saying, but our behavior is indicating that we don't, you know, respond until we feel pain. That's the point I'm making. I'm not saying that's what we are saying. But you know, we have to be careful about some of these unsaid things. You know, I know people who they see horrible things occurring, and they say nothing till the horrible things hit their home. And that's just like Malcolm X said, chicken coming home to roost. And that's what I'm saying we must be careful of and mindful of. You know, the way everybody's knee-jerking about Trump, where was the knee-jerk when you were killing people in Vietnam? Where was the knee-jerk?
You're making huge leaps here. And I think you ought to be cautioned about that. You can't say, make a sweeping statement that this is what all the people are thinking and this is what all the people are doing. No. You'd be really taking on extraordinary authority in making these statements, and they wouldn't be true. Look, life is life. People live in all these different ways, and they try to cope with the challenges before them. Don't stand up there like the prophet in the wilderness condemning everybody because you see some people appearing to be living a normal life. They're not. And they would be the first to tell you that. But they have to have some kind of way to deal with the extraordinary circumstances that they have to live with. And this is a thing that troubles me. Many people think that you're not really living a life accordingly. If you happen to have some fun, there should be no dancing.
No, you missed my point. I'm not against us having fun. I'm not against us having fun. I can continue to have fun. But yes, what I'm saying is we have to be careful
so
how you say it.
Is what I'm trying to say. You leave little room for the possibility, even the possibility that you might be off center. You are very dogmatic.
I think your statement yesterday was you may not realize it, but it was very romanticizing, and it was.
Oh, Lord.
Okay. And I think that I wish you were more, you know, vociferous, you know, like about the other evils
of the
world.
No, and that's the thing I don't like about the so-called progressive community. Unless you walk around in sackcloth and ashes, unless you are down all the time, unless you can see nothing optimistic in life, then you're not true. You're not true to the cause. Come on. Understand.
You remember that I said I'm not against people having fun.
It's about... But here you are chastising me for making reference to how people in their way managed in circumstances that were very dicey. They still managed to put the idea of family and neighborliness and all those other things that we allegedly cherish. They still managed to do that, or still tried to do that. It was not about them ignoring the reality of life. They were, in fact, suffering the brunt of it. But they still managed to try and keep things in perspective. You can't dictate how people are supposed to react to the circumstances that they're living with.
You see, you choose. I think you're missing what I'm saying. I'm not against the people going fishing, etc. When you pointed it out to me, it's like you were ignoring what was festering while all of this was occurring. That's my point.
Oh, no. Then you weren't listening. You might have been hearing, but not listening, because that is not at all what I communicated.
Okay. Well, maybe we do some more clarification on Sunday.
Okay. All right. I'm looking forward to a hug from you.
All right. Love you.
Thanks
still.
Thanks for calling in. Leslie from New York. You're on the air.
Hello. Greetings to everyone, and you too, Latrice.
Thank you. And to you too.
Okay. I have suspected the mainstream media of propaganda and censorship for many years. And I became aware of William Binney, B-I-N-N-E-Y, the ex-NSA technical director who became a whistleblower after 32 years of service. He says that the CIA has infiltrated the mainstream media and the major press between World War One and World War Two. He says also that after 9/11, his revolutionary information processing system called the Thin Thread was used to illegally spy on the private communications of all Americans, which are performed without search warrants via phone calls, the internet, and digital media. He's also with the a group called the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. They're having the same problems with the NSA. They're all whistleblowers, and they're trying to alert Americans as to what's going on with this spying on all Americans. Anyway, there's a mini biography of William Binney, B-I-N-N-E-Y, on Express VPN, Victor Paul Nunn, ExpressVPN.com. It has links to documentaries featuring him talking about this problem with the spying of by the NSA on all Americans.
Okay. Is that it?
Yes. I want the your audience and you to be informed of these goings on, because very serious. It's been going on since 2001, and I'm only giving a very concise summary of this whole problem. But I'm hoping that the PRN audience will look beyond their personal problems and their focus on the Black community. We have a lot of problems, but this is a problem that's facing the entire country, and it will only get worse if we don't become aware of it. We all don't become aware of it, and we don't make it a point to tell all our friends about it. Well, first of all, inform yourselves. Tell your friends and family about it, and then write your congresspeople about it, especially the newer congresspeople who seem not to be afraid of the establishment. So we have to use those people to undermine the NSA, get our country back on track, get back to the Constitution, and hopefully support all of our rights in the long run.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks for your contribution today. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Eutrice.
How you doing?
I want to take this opportunity to thank my committee. I'm on that Global Affairs Committee, and having them give me a leadership role in coordinating this event. I'm looking forward happily to seeing so many people come out on Sunday, and I will be delighted to see them, to see you, and all the things that we're going to talk about. Also, I want to make it clear that this is not a fundraising event for the community church or the committee. This is an event to get people together, and I think it's wonderful. I just want to remind people that everyone is welcome. There's no charge to come. There are no tickets involved. And let people know that fact. However, we are doing an event that is expensive to put on, and I am letting people know that we'll be delighted to take donations. And a donation is a voluntary contribution. So we appreciate that, and we thank people in advance for providing those donations so that we can continue to have these type of meetings to invite you and to do the things that we're going to be doing on Sunday. So thank everyone in advance for pitching in to make this possible this year and hopefully in the future also. Okay, that is essentially what I have to say right now. And thank you for being the great person you are, Eutrice. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And again, I'm bristling with anticipation. I can't wait until Sunday. Nat from New York, you're on the air.
The vibrant Eutrice. Yes, I'm one of those.
I fooled you.
you are vibrant, sister. You're wonderful, and I'm one of those who continue to pray for you on each day. And I don't feel that nervous when I call, you know. So I consider that a good step, and I definitely will be there Sunday, you know. And just to see you and all the other wonderful members of our expanding audience, and I hope they're doing well too, with the best of health. And I just look at what's going on in the world. There's so many things. There's so many topics to discuss. But just recently, I think it was yesterday, I heard that there's going to be another rally. It's going to be bigger than the one last month, and that's the protest against the climate destruction, which was started by that young girl who is now 16, Greta Thunberg, and she's the one who started demonstrating in front of the Swedish parliament he would pick up from school every Friday and would have our signs and everything, and eventually more children joined her. And when they had that huge demonstration in many countries, I think it was maybe like 50, over 50 something countries, and it was I think it was about 120 million children participated, and when I would like to see what I would really would like to see, not only with the demonstrations, but to add boycott in there, because that's something that I don't hear too many organizations or groups talk about when they do go out to march. You know, I think boycotting is something that is extremely powerful and will make corporations and governments look, because they don't want their pocketbooks touched or emptied. And this is a powerful step into getting what we want, which is justice and a clean environment with clean food, clean water. We don't want all this crap sprayed in the air. There's so many toxins that is in our foods, and we have to, the ones who really care about our health, have to go and buy organic foods. You know, we have to be careful where we get it from, and do our own cooking, because we don't want to go to restaurants. You know, it's a mess, you know. I remember back when I was growing up, back in the 40s and 50s, we didn't have to worry about organic food. I don't think I even heard the name organic, but everything was grown naturally. So I want those times to come back. And there's so much to talk about, Nutrice, vibrant Nutrice, but I'm just going to leave it here for now, and maybe, Sunday I feel terrific with no nervousness.
No nervousness, because we are just among each other. We're just meeting each other and talking.
I know, but the telephone's always different. When I'm around people, it's a different thing, but for some reason, telephone, I'm not that good, you know. Because I remember at that time, my wife, Yvonne, that's somebody who you know, too, because she interviewed you for that book, I Dream a World, you know, on the picture. Had that aging black woman that looked regal, you know, and... And there were many people that I wanted to meet through her, you know, but that didn't work. I met a lot of jazz magicians, you know, and these people was extremely not only talented but intelligent too, because we could sit down and talk about so many things, you know, like the president of Jazz Mobile, Bailey, can't think of his first name. He was also World War II hero pilot, you know, and so I met a lot of people there, and I got a lot of work because I was illustrator, and I got tons of work doing business cards, posters, flyers, you know. So she was telling me that, you know, don't be nervous, brother, you know, because the person on the other side can't see you, you know, just let it out, you know. And yes, that sounds easy, you know, but she didn't have no problem, you know, talk, because she was traveling around the world doing lectures and stuff, you know, but I'm just not cut out for that, you know. But I will see you all Sunday.
All right.
Bright and early.
All right. I'm delighted to hear that. And I'm looking forward to seeing you too now.
Yes, I am too, Yatrice. Long time. And y'all have a great day with good health.
Thank you. 888-874-4888. What's on your mind today? What have you culled from the week's activities and events that you think is, you know, might be worthy of further discussion and debate, or that you have a particular opinion about? and you'd like to share. This is really what I'm hoping that we can start, which is we have to, not that we have to, but it would be great if we develop a sense, a naturalness about it. We talk about things, because that's, believe it or not, the one thing that people are not counting on. They are in government, and they believe they have the say. They have the say all the time, and there's no reason to listen to anybody else, because they're the ones making the decisions. We are simply the ones impacted by them. So when we begin this process of feeling very natural in engaging each other, just in conversation, nothing threatening, nothing, aggressive, we're talking simply about ideas and exchanging ideas and building community. That's the one thing that we don't have. We don't have community. And by community, I mean just people who feel comfortable and natural talking and engaging with each other about things that they have in common, concerns that they have in common, projects they'd like to launch and see move ahead, issues that may not be on the front burner right now, but soon will be. And so we prepare for these kinds of things. It is the most natural way to build a community. We think that something has to happen, and then we react, and then we see the natural progression. Things are hot for an intense moment or two, and then fizzle away. Because we are forced together most often by circumstances in our lives that we are reacting to, not acting on. So I want to encourage people to do that, to be able to talk to each other in a instructive way. You could disagree. You could disagree. There's no problem there. And we shouldn't make it a problem. But we don't, I would say the most part, we don't really understand the importance of communication. We really don't. We give it short shrift. And yet it is so vitally important. We've got to extend ourselves to each other. And so we would be moving in a different direction without it being a big deal. We're just moving in a whole different way with each other, you see. And we will find out over time what a great thing it was that we had the foresight to do this. Just talk and build our communities from the inside. And strengthen our communities from the inside. And so we don't have to always be reacting. And, we have a burst of energy directed at something, and it lasts for a good minute, but then it's done. No, we want to encourage long-lasting, it may be slow change, but it would be long-lasting. It will be effective. And more than anything else, it would be us, ourselves, in the leadership role. When I say leadership, it's a word I'm very kind of skittish about. But I mean that we are lending our ideas to other people's ideas and joining them up. And coming up with something that suits us well, something that has our interests at heart. And we build on it consistently, It doesn't have to be a big thing and a big fair and lots of lights and, you know, fireworks. I find those things scarily temporary. We need to go low and slow, like you're making a good gumbo. 888-874-4888. We have quite a few minutes left, and you can get in your thoughts before we end today. I'll tell you what I'd like you to keep in mind about Sunday. I have no idea what the plan is. I have an idea only that we should plan to make an effort. That's all. Just let's plan to make an effort to gather together and form community. You belong, as of Sunday, to a community, a budding community. Where it goes from there will be up to us. And it also will be up to us whether it goes anywhere. But the main thing is that we will have had the opportunity to shake hands, meet each other, you know, laugh a little bit, and you would have started a revolution. It doesn't look like a revolution. It wouldn't feel like a revolution because we have long since misunderstood the term. We think revolution is radical, and it's about guns and shooting. No, none of that. The revolution I'm talking about is putting this idea of community first, belonging to an entity that has very simple ideas, doable ideas. And in our own way, we will just go ahead and get them done, these ideas done. But we'll talk about it. And we will appreciate where each other is coming from. And that is extremely radical community work. So I am looking forward to it. I really am looking forward to it because it's the kind of work I've done all my life. I've always done community work that, you know, moves away from the models that we were presented, that you have to have, you have to be known, you have to have big time public relations and people, you know, pumping you up. And if not, then you're not really in a community. But I also know the other side of it. When you build community and you go about your work very purposefully, very much under the radar, and you can see the immediate impact it has in transforming how people in these communities begin to change their ways of dealing with each other. Why is this important? It is important because when all is said and done, what we have or what we could have going for us is just that, community. We will not be strangers, and therefore we will not succumb to the vagaries that communities succumb to when they're not together, when there's no sense of a common cause, a fellowship. You leave yourself open all the time to strange forces acting on you and destroying the very thing that would keep you alive, that will keep you centered. And it's very simple, very simple. But if you really take some time and you look at how our communities were systematically fractured, you can see at the base of it was the consciousness on the part of forces that are against people coming together as a community, that that's exactly where they went to disable any possibility of progress. So I really am so enthusiastic about the idea, and I would like to just encourage people to develop this idea. It doesn't have to be a mass movement, and you know, we have all kinds of big public relations efforts. No, the kind of revolution I'm talking about is very quiet. It's almost imperceptible. It doesn't have a lot of the frou-frou. It doesn't have its own office, and it doesn't have any of that. Because each of us should be able to be an agent of change, just the way we are. It reminds me of, actually, it was a group of hospital workers who started this. They were from a hospital that wasn't too far away from the office. The one thing that they enjoyed doing was they loved to cook. And invariably, from time to time, I'll get a call. And on the other side of the call would be, we're making dumplings, chicken and dumplings. And they will hang up. Okay, that was a signal to me to get the heck out of the office, go down to the hospital, and then you go down in the basement, and a whole different world exists down there. There would be these men, some women, but mostly men, they're doing the cooking. And it's a very secretive thing, you know, a secretive kind of restaurant atmosphere that you had. And for that 1 hour of their lunch, they cooked and had good fun. They enjoyed their meal. And I came to find out that among the people having soup or having greens was the administrator of the hospital, who was from the Cayman Islands. Now, what are the possibilities of that happening in your mind? That a bunch of guys, on their own, they would make this thing happen. And then you get a call, and your job is to just show up and eat the food. So that's where it started for me. I thought it was the weirdest thing I'd ever seen, and it was the sweetest thing I'd ever seen. Because while they're eating, there's no delineation, there's no hierarchy. It's just people getting together who liked food, and who made the kind of food they used to eat when they were kids. And in their own little way, they were keeping their culture alive. And at the same time, they were forging relationships with each other that lasted for years. So I adopted that idea because I liked it. And the same group, many of the men in that group, decided to throw a birthday party. And it was very simple. I called it the Just As You Is party. Don't get dressed. Don't bring anything. Just come to this party prepared to have a good time, a really good time. If you're too dressed up, we'll ask you to leave. Because there were things that would happen at this party that involved you getting a little bit messed up. So it continued for several years. And I just wanted to find a way to revive it. And this seems like a great idea, to revive it this way. So I'm looking forward to Sunday. Very low-key, but we've been listening and talking to each other. And I want people to begin to feel very comfortable with the idea of their own power. Not in the way people typically describe power. But power is the ability to influence beneficial change in the simplest ways. Just start there. Nobody is asking for perfection or anything. Just a good heart. And you build on that. You'd be amazed that probably years from now, you would recall these moments and you would see for yourself how, without expecting it, you created change. It didn't cost you anything. It didn't inconvenience you in any way. And you were doing serious work, very serious work. I used to go all the way up past the Tappan Zee Bridge. And that was where I would work. Nobody invited me. I didn't ask permission. I just went. It was a heavily Haitian community up there. And I would go because I used to love to drive around and see new things. And I got to learn there was a huge community up there. And we started reading. The kids loved it. And then every now and then you'd see grandma, or you'll see an older aunt, or you'll see a neighbor showing up. And all we're doing is reading. Nothing more. No money changed hands. There was no fee for anything. It's just we're sitting around reading. And then you introduce people to books. And then they start talking about their experiences, young and old. It was a fascinating thing. That's what we need. That's the revolution we need. We need quiet little revolutions that tackle the formidable challenges that are against us. But when you boil it down to a simple common denominator, what you get is we are not spending time with each other. We are not really communing with each other. And we're operating on a lopsided model of outside in. It never works. It's inside out. Start where you are, in whatever way you can, and create a change right where you are. Well, thanks so much for listening today and contributing. We've come to the end of today's program. It's the weekend, Of course, we'll see each other Sunday, but it's good to surround yourselves with people who make great investments in you. Bye-bye.